Okay, thank you, Dr. Middleman. And our next speaker is Dr. Melissa Stockwell, who is an assistant professor of pediatrics and population family health at Columbia University. She is medical director of the New York Presbyterian Hospital Immunization Registry and co-director of Columbia's Primary Care Clinician Research Fellowship in Community Health. Dr. Stockwell?
Great. Thank you so much for inviting me today. So I'm going to, you guys heard about some of the barriers and challenges and successes in adolescent immunization from Dr. Middleman. And what I was asked to talk about is the increasing interest in using text messaging for adolescent immunizations and some best practices that have begun to emerge as we start to do this more, and particular focus on some of the logistics of using text messaging, since that's what I tend to get most phone calls about. I just need to close. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit first about the use of cell phones and text messaging in general in the United States, and then why text messages might be good immunization reminders. Talk to you about some interest in text messaging both from the family and provider perspective, then some studies, particularly in adolescents, using text message immunization reminders, some lessons and best practices that we've learned, and then some conclusions and remaining questions. So cell phone penetration in the U.S. currently is 102% of the population. So that means there are actually more cell phones in the U.S. than there are people. And there's a thought there might even be even higher rates in low-income populations. And a lot of families and households actually don't even have landlines anymore. So use of cellular telephones is really something that most families do have access to. And in terms of using text messaging, a lot of parents of our patients commonly have cell phones, and they commonly are able to use text messages. So there was a study by Aller Schmidt in Kansas of 190 low-income parents with children less than 6 years. And then we recently did a similar study of 200 low-income parents of children less than 5 years. And despite one study being done in Kansas and one study being done in New York City, we found surprisingly similar rates of both use of text messages. So about 90% of families had cell phones that could receive text messages. And surprisingly, most of them had unlimited plans, so 81 to 85%, which means that receiving text messages or sending text messages to providers actually don't cost anything extra to the families. And then we had also done some focus groups, particularly of parents of adolescents, and the numbers are pretty similar, 86% had received text messages. So despite cell phones being common and text messages being common, the use of text messaging for health-related issues is still quite uncommon. And the original focus groups that we had done, only one parent had ever received a text message from a medical provider. And then our more recent survey, 4% had sent and only 16% had received text messages about health-related issues. But it does seem to be a burgeoning field where people are beginning to use text messages for things like diabetes care, appointment reminders, contraceptive reminders, and then obviously for immunization reminders, which is what I'm going to focus on. So why might text messages make good immunization reminders? The first is stability of contact information. So as Amy Middleman had mentioned, reminder recalls are very widely recommended, but they actually haven't necessarily worked so well in adolescent populations or in low-income populations. And some of the thoughts around that is that the contact information for either phone calls or for postcards changed a lot over time, and so there's a lot of undeliverable mail and phone calls that don't reach the right person. And in a recent study out of Michigan, Sarah Clark and Kevin Domkowski, a national study showed, interestingly, that cell phones may actually be more stable over a six-month period than home address or home phone numbers. So really, cell phones might be a more reliable way to be able to reach our patients. In addition, they might grab attention in a way that letters or phone calls don't, and that's a theme that came up in some of our early focus groups. Their parents say that when they get a letter, they just get thrown in a bin. If they get a phone call, they get so many of those. But a text message still grabs their attention. Also, and perhaps maybe most importantly, they tend to reach the intended participant. So if you send a letter to a house, even if it gets delivered, it may not get to the caregiver of the child, or it may not be shared amongst the guardians or caregivers of the child. In addition, if you do an automated phone call, whoever picks up the phone is going to get that message, and so it may, again, not reach the person who's making healthcare decisions about that child, that adolescent. But a text message will get to the person whose phone number that you have, and also they can look at it and act on it at a time that's good for them, as opposed to a phone call that might come during dinner. They don't necessarily want to listen to the whole thing and may hang up or may not get to the end of the message. It also stays visible on the cell phone, so it's easily accessible. That's particularly important if it's going to be used for something like appointment reminders or walk-in times. Then the family actually has it on their phone and can refer to it at a time that they want to, and as well as when they're trying to decide, for example, to come in as a walk-in. And perhaps the biggest thing for text messaging is scalability. So text messaging, once you have a platform, actually costs very little per message. And so you can text thousands and thousands of people at once for very little additional cost. And that makes it something that would be very good to use with the immunization registry, something that Dr. Middleman had talked about, as well as electronic health record. And as the nation starts to move forward with meaningful use and more people are using electronic health records, which often include immunization records, then text messaging may actually become even more interesting for people to be using. In addition, while you can text thousands of people at once and do it in an automated fashion, you can also tailor the messages. So you can decide based on age or based on vaccination and have it be fully automated who gets what kind of message at what time and who you want to text message first. You also can send multiple messages, have messages stop people who get vaccinated, especially if you have a platform that talks with a registry. And there's really a huge amount of power in text messaging where you can reach a lot of people at once. So the next question is, are families and parents interested in text messaging? And they definitely do seem to be. In our focus groups, many said they would prefer text messaging to mail or phone reminders. In the study that I mentioned before, 90% of the families surveyed were open to text messages from their doctor or nurse. And in the national study that Drs. Clark and Domkowski had conducted, more than 50% were willing to register their cell phone with their child's immunization provider. So it definitely does seem that people are interested in text messaging. And in terms of some thoughts that what parents thought would be useful for them for text messages, some suggested characteristics would, that they be simple, that they be short, that they be personalized, and they include some kind of provider information, ones that the families knew who it was from, but also a phone number or something that they could then follow up on. In terms of potential barriers that have been raised by families, although actually really a minority of families have raised these, but one is cost, and I think that will become less of an issue as people use more likely to use unlimited text messaging plans, privacy, and the difficulty of using cell phones, especially interactive text messaging. And so we had found in our early focus groups that families, particularly parents of adolescents, could receive messages, but they had a lot of trouble texting back. And I think that also is going to change over time as people get more familiar with using text messaging. From the provider perspective, there's been a mixed interest. So there was a study done of 149 providers in Kansas, and 27% were willing, and 43% were undecided about using text messaging, particularly for immunization recalls. But actually none of them had ever used text message reminders. And so I think as providers start to get more comfortable and use it more, I think that the interest will increase. So for example, we did a study of our providers and staff, and the majority, so 88 to 96%, were interested in and were very supportive of using text messaging. So I've told you a little bit about the use of cell phones in general, about text messaging, why reminders might be useful. And so now I'm going to tell you about two studies that we've done, particularly focusing on adolescents and using text messaging in terms of their effectiveness. So in the first study, we had parents of 195 11 to 18-year-olds who needed either Enacta or Tdap, and we matched them by age and gender to controls from different practices. And what we did is we looked at 4, 12, and 24 weeks after they were sent a series of text message reminders, letting them know their child was in need of vaccination. And just to orient you to the slide, if you look here, for example, this is the at 4 weeks, this is the intervention adolescents. About 15% of them had received a Enacta or a Tdap, compared to the control, which is about 4%. So then you could see here, we look at the percentage point difference, and 11 percentage point difference between the two groups at 4 weeks. At 12 weeks, it was about 12%, and by 24 weeks, it was an actually 18 percentage point difference. We also looked at any additional vaccine, so whether not just Menactra or Tdap, but did they get any kind of vaccine they might need? And most commonly, they received HPV, Hep A, influenza, varicella, and MMR. And again, at 4, 12, and 24 weeks, we did see a significant difference between the groups. With another study focusing particularly on HPV vaccination, that was something that Dr. Miller had mentioned as a vaccine in adolescents that we really still have a lot of work to do. In this case, 9 to 20-year-olds and their families received an enrollment card when they got either their first or second dose of HPV vaccine, and then they got a series of reminders to come back for their second or third dose, depending on which dose they enrolled with. And then we compared enrollees versus non-enrollees and historical controls. And again, for the enrollees, about 52% got their next HPV vaccine dose on time. That was compared to 35% non-enrollees and 38% of historical controls. So I think there's growing evidence that text messaging for adolescent immunizations is effective, but there are some lessons that we've begun to learn. The first is making the messages. So messages need to be brief and personal, and this is something, again, that has come up in numerous formative work with families about what they want in text messages. And text messages are only 160 characters. It's really important that people don't go over that, because what will happen is it will cause two messages to be sent. And one, it might cost more to the participant, but also the messages might not come in the order that you think, and they might get the second message first, and that can be very confusing to families. It's really important not to use abbreviations or slang. A lot of our families felt this was that because it was coming from a medical provider, it was very important that the right tone be used and that people be polite and be formal. And actually, particularly when forming the messages, to not feel like that they were being ordered to do something, but more that it was a recommendation or that it was something that we suggested to them. You also need to be very careful. All our messages are always sent in English or Spanish based on our population, our registration system. But you really need to be working with someone from the population who knows texting to make sure that the messages are culturally and linguistically equivalent and that they mean the same thing. And so it's really important to do the legwork in your own population. And we always start any of our interventions, we start with doing interviews or focus groups and really testing the messages with our population to make sure that they say what we want them to say. The next things are responses. So it's important to know that there will be incoming responses back. Some of those might be bounces if the message is undeliverable, and it's important to talk with the text message provider whether you're going to get that information back from them and whether that's necessary or not. In addition, incoming texts need to be monitored. So on one level, I think families know that there isn't necessarily someone who's actually typing in the text message to them, but they do feel like it's coming from their practice or if it's coming from some kind of public health organization, and they sometimes do respond back. And so we always have an automated response for unexpected incoming texts, particularly the first thing saying, if you need medical care, you know, please call your child's provider, giving a phone number to call, in some way letting them know that there isn't someone who is necessarily real-time monitoring their responses. We also always provide a landline for someone to call. And also, if you're going to be texting not from a short code but from an actual telephone number, that phone number has some kind of voicemail on it so that if someone does try to call back that number, they can get some kind of information. In addition, you have to have a way people can stop or opt out of getting further reminders. We've actually found that it's very, very rare that people actually want to stop reminders. Only 2 to 5% of our population in any of our studies have asked to stop. We also allow people to get help either using keywords or phone number for them to call. And then we found it to be very effective to be able to change language automatically in the messages. So our messages are sent in English. There's a way to automatically change them to Spanish and vice versa. This is just an example of a sort of generic text message, including where the person could go. This one was particularly for coming in for walk-in times, a way to stop, and then a way to switch to Spanish automatically, as well as a phone number to call. And you can see you can get a lot, but you can't get a huge amount in 160 characters. Sorry. And I think the final and perhaps most important are the downstream effects. So as I mentioned, you can text thousands and thousands of people at once, but you have to be very mindful of what you're asking them to do. So you can't text thousands of people and ask them all to walk in at the same time or to all call the same number at the same time. And it's important to, it's really a collaborative effort with a clinical site or whoever you're working with in terms of how many people you think are going to respond, and then really work it out with them so you're not texting everybody at once. And I think another corollary to that is the timing of messages. So, for example, you don't want to send a text message on a Saturday telling people to call the office if the office isn't open. One of the key things with text messaging is it acts as a cue to action or as a prompt, and you want people to be able to act on it right away. So you don't want them to not be able to act on it given the time frame that you've texted them. So again, you want to be aware of that. So I think I've hopefully told you, convinced you that parents do have text messaging and cell phones, that they do seem to be interested, and that text message invitation reminders do seem to be effective, although I think there needs to be more studies and more people who are doing this with different ages and different practices. And I think some best practices are beginning to emerge about text messaging. I think there are a few remaining questions, one particularly in adolescents about who to text. And then I think this question about interactivity is something that we're going to sort of have to see as we go forward and people get more comfortable with text messaging in terms of how much interaction they can do in a text. I just want to thank my amazing study team. The hospital has been very supportive of our work. HRSA and CDC, who have been instrumental in helping fund our work. And thank you all for listening.